Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Once again, my buddy, Brad Coates, is on. Hello, Brad. Calling from Hawaii.
Hello, buddy, Diana.
Don't we wish
How are you?
You were there.
Proud to be your buddy in Hawaii.
Yeah, you are. And my husband and I saw you and your significant other in December, and I don't think you've been on since then. I mean,
well, it's about time.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've been on more than almost anybody in my stable of guests, as I sometimes call them. And anyway, what came out just in the next month after our visit to Hawaii, which was so wonderful. It's just great to, great fun to be with you and other friends there. So, but what came out in the Seattle Times, but it's from the New York Times, was do more couples get divorced in January? And I shared that article with you. It was January 5th, 2020. And of course, it's around New Year's resolutions. It's a new year, a new you, a new start. What
I can tell you, as a divorce lawyer, that is absolutely true. I mean, they've done surveys that show that most of the single biggest month for divorce filings nationwide is January, and actually they've narrowed it down to, I think it's January 6th or 7th, something like that, is the single biggest day for filings of all. And, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what happens. People kind of limp along through December. Nobody wants to get divorced in the middle of Christmas. You got kids, you got family, you got everybody all, you know, focused around that. And then the total mindset switches come January, and you're making New Year's resolutions, dump that jerk of a spouse or whatever, and move on with your life, or I want to do this or that or the other's different than I was doing last year. And so it's a very natural thing to be switching a focus from a preservation pro-family mode in December to you know, clear the decks and move on with our life in December. And actually, December can even be slightly more irritating. I mean, you know, if I have to listen to his mother's pumpkin pie recipe one more time, I'm out of here. That, you know, and having to be in close proximity with, you know, people that maybe you've been able to keep your distance from. So it could actually exacerbate things. But then they wait till January to move forward with it.
Mm-hmm. And I read too that there's another uptick in filings after Valentine's Day, and again in August when the children have had a summer off and before school starts. So times.
Well, especially it's actually what I found in September. They do what they do in August. They do what they do in December, which is they limp through that last family vacation, the Labor Day picnics, the, you know, the beach house rental or something like that. And and again, they may be coming to a boil in August, and then September is when everybody files. I actually have my attorneys in this firm, the Coates, Fry, Tanimoto, and Gibson firms, the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii, and we've got a dozen lawyers here doing nothing but family law. And I tell them to, you know, I don't give people vacation time in January. I tell people to batten down the hatches and be ready for an influx of business in September and January, and that is exactly when it comes in.
And yes, and it's well, you've been running this firm, you and Fay, yes, and you must have taken on a couple of other partners, because I don't recognize those names. Tanimoto and Gibson.
You know, both. Fry is actually his name's pronounced Fry, and he's actually the president of the statewide bar association here in Hawaii this year. So he's a busy boy doing, you know, macro stuff. I'm getting older, so we brought in a couple of younger guys who are not nearly as handsome as we are, but maybe more modest and maybe more productive. So we've got a couple of new partners in now.
And also, when you do decide to maybe semi-retire, it makes the exit a little smoother, and doesn't it? If you already have younger attorneys that you've trained.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, there's a couple of aspects to that. One, you know, my firm is probably, not even probably, and I don't want to diss other Hawaii law firms, but we're realistically the only law firm in town that takes my divorce with decency. The book I wrote is called Divorce with Decency, and I try to apply that as the mantra for the firm. We actually try to get people out of their misery more efficiently with less animosity and lower cost than any other firm. And, you know, lawyers get paid by the hour, so a lot of lawyers, there's that movie, The Marriage Story or Divorce Story or whatever it is.
I haven't seen it. This year it was at the Academy Awards, Marriage Story.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the thesis of that is that the divorce lawyer, the parties themselves are doing okay, the husband and wife, until the divorce lawyers get into it and they just make things worse. And that really is something you got to be very careful about in divorce representation, is the lawyers, you know, make it a mess of things. So we're the only ones that try to do it the nice guy way and in town here, and not just in Honolulu, but all through the whole state of Hawaii we got offices. So we do a lot of stuff for a lot of people, like thousands, tens of thousands of divorces for people, and I want that to carry on. I want that, you know, I want the new guys to carry on that approach, and that's kind of what I've staked my career on, and I want it to continue. Plus, the flip side is, you know, old folks like my age, I'm late 60s now, that's not the demographic that gets divorced, although, you know, now that's not even true because the gray divorces are taking hold, but for old time, mm-hmm. Baby boomers are getting divorced a lot, but mainly the people that get divorced is after the what's called the 7-year itch. People get married in their late 20s or early 30s and then they're getting divorced in their mid to late late 20s and is when they get married, and then they're getting divorced in their, you know, mid to late 30s. So having younger partners that are, you know, more plugged into that cohort of society is probably smart from a business standpoint.
Absolutely. You know, in Dr. Luanne Brizendine's book, The Female Brain, she points out that the female brain does not fully mature until the age of 25. And I've always said that it's a mistake to get married when you're in your 20s. Maybe late 20s, but for young men and young women, they're not mature enough to make these decisions. They don't have enough, I'm speaking generally, but they don't have enough life experience under their belts, and they may still have way too much wanderlust. I know I did. I wanted to travel the world and not settle down, so I didn't marry till I was 2 months short of 30 the first time. But I knew I'd have more to offer my children. What?
Kids are definitely not marrying at those younger ages anymore. So that, you know.
I know. Yeah. It's true. But yes. All right. So we could go off on some tangents about that. But you talk about the rather divergent wants, needs, expectations, and desires which men and women each have for their romantic relationships. And you point out the three main causes of divorce: sex, money, and family. And, of course, Dr. Diana and the name for the show, naturally I want to focus a little more on sex. But first, what you present first in your outline is communication, and that, of course, has to be right at the top. You've got to be able to communicate well, and I'm so glad that. And we've had other chats about communication, but what I especially love in your outline here is the 15 little words. 15 little words.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is
great. Classic.
This is Ann Landers. Advice to husbands. Now, some younger listeners may not even know who she is, but she had a nationally syndicated column for 50 years probably, and way before the internet. And she said the 15 little words were, I love you, you look great, let's eat out, can I help you, it's my fault.
And those are great. I mean, you know, that is exactly what women want to hear, and what guys don't realize is how often they want to hear them. I mean, one of the problems, realistically, is that guys don't understand that you just can't tell her often enough how happy you are. I mean, like, daily. Because women want to have sort of constant communication, whereas guys have this instinctive, you know, I told her once that she looked good in that dress. I mean, that may have been six months ago, but, you know, but why should I, you know, she knows I think she's pretty, or she knows I love her, or we know we're going out to dinner. So why even talk about it? You know, the reality of it is women have a whole different process of communication, and that goes back to stuff you and I have talked about you know, Dr. John Gray and Dr. John Gottman, you know, some of these gurus who really focus on interspousal communication, and it's absolutely true.
It really is. You know, a lot of guys might think there's a four letter word that would make my marriage or my relationship better, and so much better. And it's not F-U-C-K, as some guys would like to believe. It's P-A-L-K.
Yeah.
It's really, really important. And
in fact, if the man moves too quickly to the F-U-C-K instead of the T-A-L-K, he's really going to turn the woman off. So women have to have the whole setting. They have to have you know, candlelight and music and the romantic setting, and he's got to coo at her a little bit, and certainly when it comes down to actually getting the clothes off, there's got to be longer foreplay. And you know, guys tend to just what's the old joke? Women need the time and the emotion to have sex, and guys just need a place. And that's really you know, that may be an oversimplification, but not by much. Guys are, you know, pretty quick to just move right along, and too quick for most females.
That's very, very true. So maybe, is there anything else you want to say about communication before we get more into sex?
I know you're in a hurry to get to sex, so let's go right ahead and do that. That's always your favorite, and it's kind of been one of mine over the years too. So I think that's.
Yes, we have our personal enthusiasms about sex, respectively, and then in my case, clinical observations from having seen thousands of couples, you from having also seen thousands of couples ending a relationship. So we're going to talk about sex, and then we're also going to talk about older women in divorce. And
so I had a question for you, oh great guru.
Yes.
I've got a statistic in my book that says about 60% of men, but only about 35% of women, say sexual activity is important in their lives. So my question to the sex therapist is, why is it that more women are not so interested in sex?
Well, it's a good question, and I think there are many answers, and sometimes there's a confluence of these issues altogether, which add up to a low libido for a woman. If she's perimenopausal, which can occur, you know, through most of the 40s, her 40s, except for other women it's much shorter, but perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal, if her hormones are not balanced, her libido will go down, and her sense of well-being will go down. I'm in my 70s, and I have been on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy for about 20 years, and it has made a huge difference in my appearance, in my bones, in my health, in my sex drive, everything. So I think women, the NIH study in 2004, where a lot of women went off of HRT, and the study was not on bioidentical but on the synthetic hormones, because women just, if their hormones are not balanced, they're often a mess. Now, if they don't want to take bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, like if there's breast cancer in the family and estrogen, taking estradiol, the bioidentical, can up the chances for... So you have to work with your doctor, breast cancer. But it's worth pursuing and getting a blood test to see where one's levels are. The other reason why women tend to be less interested in sex, besides their hormones not being in balance, is that they may have had some sexual trauma in their past. They may have a husband whose communication is poor, whose hygiene is poor. That's a real deal breaker. And who really doesn't get it, that she needs more emotional foreplay, appreciation. You deal with that in your outline, where you say, so fellas, you just can't tell her often enough how happy you are and how great it is to have her in your life. And because when relationships unravel because of emotional undernourishment, it's just for that reason. I mean, long-term couples, to keep sex lively, need to focus more on the positives. The positives instead of the negatives and try,
you know,
to... Yes.
Going back to your issue about hormones, I mean, you know, I'm not sure guys understand how much female hormones change over the course of their lives as compared to guys who really don't all that much. I mean, you know, girls, you know, they grow breasts, they start having a period, everything's switching around. They, as they age out, they stop having a period, they go through menopause, there's just, they're major junctures in female lives that can be attributable strictly to hormonal and metabolic changes in the female body. Whereas guys, you know, their testicles drop, maybe they get a little bit of more hair on them or whatever. But, you know, I mean, guys don't just go vacillating all around in the way that women do with major hormonal changes. You know, guys' bodies, you know, they go through some quick hormone spurts from 12 to, you know, 17, 18, 19, whatever, and the male body changes. And then it stabilizes for decades, whereas the female body is constantly changing. And I'm not sure guys really understand that. That was something that a physician friend of mine pointed out.
Yes. And her body also, and her hormones also fluctuate hugely with childbirth. I mean, pregnancy and childbirth. Hugely. And
right.
And so do a man's. Well, you pointed that out at one point, and it's true. Men's levels of testosterone seem to drop when he's about to be a father. And so he has that. But that may have to do with, from an evolutionary point of view, he's supposed to help his partner with the baby. I want to go back to a testosterone thing about men. So Luann Brizentine, who wrote The Male Brain, she estimates that if testosterone were beer, when a boy is 9 years old, he has about 2 cups. By the time the kid is 15, he's got 2 gallons. He's got so much more testosterone on board. And, you know, he's not feigning boredom. He is bored. There has to be a lot of stimulation for the teenage kid to engage.
Mm-hmm.
I do recommend Luann Brizentine's books. They were written 2004 and 2006, I think. First she wrote The Female Brain, and then she told her colleagues that she was going to write The Male Brain, and they joked with her, and they said, well, it's that male brain. It's going to be a slimmer volume for sure, and it's not true. But Gray points out, and as other people point out, that the male and female brains are different.
Well, the 2 cups versus 2 gallons is a pretty interesting analogy. Wow.
Isn't that if testosterone were beer?
Yeah.
So there
yeah.
are, that's a pretty major, well, don't you, can you remember when you were a teenage boy?
Barely. I think I'm still a teenage boy, but yeah.
I think you are too, in some ways. But that's part of your charm, Brad, that you're playful, you're fun, you're a horny guy. You have a good sex drive for a man your age.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get over that, but yeah.
Don't know. You know, I'm married to one of those guys too. High sex drive. It's a delight, and it's really important for women in order to be sexually responsive and have lots of orgasms and all of that. Women need to feel desired and need to be told that they're desired. And
yeah.
So a lot of men just are not quite up to that, or have some childhood trauma themselves, or, it's so complicated. This is why I love my work. It's ever-changing. I hear new stories all the time as a sex therapist. Yep.
And it's really important because, you know, especially for men, for both genders, but one of the main reasons men get divorced is over the sex issue. You're not going to see a guy say, "Hey, I want a divorce because we don't communicate enough." When we talk about the big causes of divorce, when we talk about family issues, money issues, sex issues, those kind of things. I mean, sex is the biggie for a guy. Guys will. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had, you know, wahine, you know, which is Hawaiian for women, clients come into my office and say, "You know, my husband's, you know, he's acting so strange, and all of a sudden he wants a divorce, and maybe he's going through a midlife crisis." And I'm going, "You know, does he possibly have a new gal, do you think?" And they go, "Oh, no, I'm sure I'd know that." And I go, "Well, you might just keep an eye out for that." And then, you know, a couple months later, they're back in my office saying, "You know, you were right. It turns out he was having an affair with his secretary or whatever." And men will rarely leave a relationship unless they've got some other woman that they're zeroing in on. And that usually has to do with sex. Whereas women, you know, the communication issues and the money and the security issues are every bit as important as the sexual issues as far as when you talk about the big causes of divorce. And so it is. If somebody like you, or you specifically, Dr. Diana, the sex therapist, can fix the sex situation in couples' lives, you know, oftentimes you can save the marriage.
Yeah, of course. I facilitate the fixing, and they have to do their homework, which means the reading materials I give them, and some of the touching exercises, and some of the suggestions around positions for intercourse, and some of the suggestions around outer course, and sensate focus and touching, but if a couple's so angry with each other, and this is why I know, Brad. Because back when I lived in Hawaii so long ago now, I haven't lived there for over 20 years. Did you know that?
And the place has not been the same since.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so very sweet of you. But
what you were saying, let me interrupt for a second. Saying, even about the touching exercises or the discussions, people just don't discuss sex. So, I mean, I'm having a sex therapist, you know, I maybe more marriage counselors ought to have at least a few courses in sex therapy as well, because, you know, people just don't talk about this. They just go right ahead and get divorced without ever having discussed the root cause of the problem a lot of the time. And I think you're very useful, you know, just in that context alone, facilitating those discussions. I think it's huge.
Well, it is huge, and If people go to my website, and I rarely advertise this, but I will now, the website is drdianawiley.com, and under the testimonials are, probably 20 over, I could have even posted more. I don't post. Brian posts, my husband. But just could have posted more, but there are at least 20 over the 11 years I've been in Seattle practicing, and they're very real testimonials. They're very real, and they're talking about how, yes, you saved our marriage, and it was the therapy was transformational. And honestly, Brad, this is why I'm in a wonderful profession, including for my own successful aging, because I don't age out of the profession.
I think you're in a very fruitful. crucial profession. I'm a fan.
And it's really wonderful to help people make changes. And are the changes, are they able to sustain them? And some couples drop out too soon. But I'm all for sex therapy. What I started to say is back when I lived in Honolulu, you would refer some of your clients to me.
Yeah, and I wish I had somebody here now to refer to, because I won't say it's a lost art, and maybe I just don't know, maybe I haven't got the directory of sex therapists, but I think it's probably, as you would say, a slim volume. And I think that is, I think that's a real loss, because I just know from a guy's perspective and from representing a lot of male clients that like I say, the only reason guys, not the only, but one of the main reasons that guys will go out of it and get both stray from a marriage is over the sex issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, here you talk, you have all these, psychotherapists that'll start with saying, hey, tell me about your childhood and what was your mother like and your family, your father or whatever. And, as if that's going to, lead to fixing the marriage. I mean, it's standard psychobabble. I realize that. But, I wish that they'd just cut to the chase and go, hey, how's your experience with orgasms I tell people frequently if they're on the fence about whether to get divorced or not, and I'll say, well, how was your physical sex life? And they'll go, well, we haven't, we're sleeping in separate bedrooms, we haven't done that, and I say, well, you might just try resuscitating it, because a picture's worth a million words. If you come into the bedroom and say, hey, I really feel like we're, needing to put some, excitement back into our life, or maybe we're on the wrong track with this divorce, and, let's see if we can't rekindle things, can we pick a time? So at our age, you almost have to organize a specific time to have sex. The just spontaneous sex is a little less likely at my age anyway. Let's try having sex again.
At any age, because you've heard me talk about two syndromes, DINS, double income, no sex, and the TTFS syndrome, which is too tired for sex. I work with so many couples that are in their 30s and 40s. They both have demanding, stressful jobs, sometimes with small children, and just spontaneous sex is not to be had. You have to put it on the calendar. We put a lot of things on the calendar within that framework. We can have some fun. But
I get these clients to say, well, we've been sleeping in separate bedrooms. And I say, well, why don't you try and bridge that gap? Why don't you propose to her that you at least try and see how it feels to be physical together? That almost more than going to a marriage counselor if she immediately recoils and says, like you said, hygiene, there's all kinds of things. I don't want to, then maybe more than you thought you knew going to marriage counselors for 6 months. Just, try and see what you can put together or not in the bedroom, and that may be the picture that's worth a thousand words.
No, I agree, but I think what has to go along with that suggestion is try to address some other issues together. This is where it helps if you have a professional, because I'm just thinking that for other older women, because their hormones are not in balance, a lot of women are having pain with sex, pain with intercourse.
Right.
And that has to be evaluated first by a doctor, and then I make referrals to PTs, physical therapists who specialize in pelvic floor, and sometimes women need to have their vet working, this is working with doctors or naturopaths, me, and sometimes the vaginal opening, because the hormones, estrogen and testosterone, progesterone are maybe low, she has pain, or if she hasn't been practicing.
Right.
I tell women who don't have partners, and if they're perimenopausal or menopausal, get a dildo that vibrates. Put that dildo in your vagina after you've aroused yourself with some masturbation, maybe with reading erotica. Women tend to tend to respond better to reading erotica than watching porn, for example. Although some
That's
women like female produced for porn. But women need to have a vibrating or not vibrating, but a comfortable dildo in their vaginas and do their Kegels, clench on that, because her vaginal walls need to stay strong. And an regular intercourse, or maybe even this masturbation with a dildo. Boy, when I was in Hawaii, I couldn't talk about some of these things so directly, even on my radio show. There's still a legacy from the missionaries who were there in the late 1800s, but there are a lot of people that are very conservative and don't want to hear such explicit talk as I was just doing.
You are nothing if not explicit. It's a shame. As I listen to you, it's a shame that Valentine's Day has already passed. A vibrator would have been the perfect gift for my girlfriend.
Aren't you enough for her?
She probably would have used it to replace me, but yeah.
Confident men who are sexually confident can embrace the toy when they're having partner sex and use it to his advantage. We're getting off on topic, but
embrace the toy. That's my new mantra. Okay. Regardless of how, you know, we're making light of it, but I mean, however you go about discussing it and dealing with it, sex is an issue that, just like when you were on your radio show on here in Hawaii, it's put to the side and not talked about very often. And that's a mistake, because I can tell you for a fact that, just like I was giving the example of when my clients come in and say, my husband's leaving, I can't figure out why, and I say, well, look for another woman. It's almost women will get divorced for all the right reasons, philosophically, you know, lack of communication, he's not as romantic as I would like, he's not as intellectual, he's not as whatever, I mean, he's not a good provider, they've got a very long laundry list of qualities they want to see in their guy. In guys, it is a different story. Guys, it's often, if they're going to leave a relationship, it's almost always because they've got another relationship in mind, and that is that's a traceable pattern. And maybe if people would talk more openly about sex, they wouldn't have to go so far outside of their relationship to find it. But guys are that way. I mean, you know, we've talked about this on your show before. That, you know, men are usually the first to say "I love you," for example.
Yeah,
60% of the time, it's usually the guys. You know, you would think it'd be the schmaltzy, emotional woman who would say, "Oh, I love you," but it's not. It's the guy who says, "I love you." Usually, about 3.5 months into the relationship, and oftentimes the woman is still calculating what kind of a provider is this guy going to be. What has he got a job? Is he going to be good? Is he going to be a good father? They've got a laundry list that's. Whereas for men, it's like, oh, she's got big boobs, I want her. I mean, you know, literally. I mean, guys are pretty shallow that way. And it's an ongoing problem, I think, that some of this stuff doesn't get discussed, a little more seriously. Because if you could bring back a lot of the men.
Yes, but the example you just gave with guys being content with if she has big boobs, those are usually the younger guys. I think older guys, as they mature and they think about their own emotional and physical needs, are more likely to choose wisely,
Let's hope so, but I've seen an awful lot of guys, fall for a girl based upon physical looks. You wish it would go a little deeper than that and it'd be a little more logical choice. And like I say, for women, it usually is. I mean, although young women will sometimes fall for handsome guys, but you won't see older women doing that. Well, you know, older women are much more methodical. And certainly before women get married, they're going to take serious inventory. I don't know what's going on with this Tinder generation of, you just swipe right if you like somebody's looks. But, that may be even exacerbating the problem, because now so many of these damn dating sites, I don't operate on the dating sites, but, what you understand about them, a lot of it's physical based. So Yes. Maybe as you age out, you get a new reality show.
I haven't seen it, but I had a couple describe it to me yesterday, Monday. And it's called Love is Blind, and it's a reality show, I think, on Netflix. I have not seen it because I don't get Netflix, but I've seen it promoted, and these couples do not see each other. They're in cubicles, they communicate, and then they're going to get married, and then they finally see each other, and they can decide then whether they want to get married or not. I mean, it's a typical reality show in that it's a little shallow, and
yeah, most of them seem to be, yeah.
Yeah, but it is true. A lot of young people do put a lot of emphasis on the looks, and I know as I matured, if I met a man, after a divorce and I was single, or after being widowed, as you know, with Charlie, because you knew Charlie back then, I would, if a man wasn't so physically attractive, I would, but there were other things that were good, I would give him a chance. I might not have done that in my 20s.
Yeah,
hopefully
you're a more evolved woman, but it's an interesting scenario where you get so much of this stuff now seems to be based upon physical looks that did not happen when I was growing up. I mean, you actually did wind up having a chance to talk to people before you swiped right and decided that you were going to date them, or swiped left and decided you weren't going to date them, or maybe I've got that backwards. I don't know how that works exactly, but I mean, it's mm-hmm. definitely a different deal when you've got so many choices being made so fast through social media and the internet without any time to really get to know people. To go back to your issue on the whole sex as being one of the causes, or lack of sex being lack of satisfying sex being one of the big three causes of relationships ruptures, along with family and money. There's a couple of interesting statistics that I've got in my book. Women preferring foreplay to sex by 24%, and your clever term for that was outer course. I like that term. 43% of women versus only 38 or 39% of men admitting to dissatisfaction in the bedroom. 3 out of 4 women preferring kissing to actual sex. And your favorite phrase, "kiss rhymes with bliss," which is I use that one once in a while too. You know, it is just it can be a real tricky thing to sort out between the genders, because they do have entirely different. Not entirely different, but dramatically different approaches to the sex issue. I don't know. It's very interesting to watch, at least from my perspective. I mean, and it could be getting even stranger, because let's face it, at least some men seem to be getting weirder, even weirder sexually. We've talked about, you and I before have talked about the basic biology regarding orgasms, where men can ejaculate within 5 or 6 minutes, and for women it's 18 minutes of foreplay before she's even able to have an orgasm, if then.
And then you get
what's happening, you and I have talked about this before, the Viagra divorces, and that's a bizarre phenomena, this supposed better living through chemistry. It used to be that each of the genders, by the time they got to be, your age, my age, whatever, 60s, 70s, a lot of, not you and I, because we seem to be hypersexual, but a lot of our peers that have been married 20 or 30 years by then, and they were aging out, kind of sex would begin to take a back seat in each of their lives. Guys couldn't maintain erections the way they used to. They couldn't be as sexual on their end of things. And maybe women were, like you say, it was getting painful or getting dry or whatever, and then they couldn't be as sexual. And you would just sort of laugh that part off now, in those days. We're 65, 70 years old. It's a good thing we've been together and love each other on so many other levels, because sex is old news. And I think that's true for an awful lot of couples. I'm sure you see them too, where they haven't had sex for a long time. Now you've got Viagra, and guys get cocky because all of literally cocky because all of a sudden they, you know, they're able to maintain an erection that they previously thought they'd lost, and then they want to use it. You know, if Viagra's an instant erection, you know, type of thing, and you know, then whereas it used to be hard enough to get guys to partake with the 18 minutes of foreplay that women are hoping for, now guys are, you know, it's 18 seconds. I've got an erection. I want to stick it somewhere. So I think and women don't have yet a commensurate kind of chemical that gets them going the way Viagra gets males going. So it seems to be driving an even bigger wedge in some situations. What do you find about that?
I think that's true. I mean, Pfizer had great success, obviously, with Viagra, approved when I was still in Hawaii in April of 1998. And I had, for my show
was
then...
Was that when Viagra was approved, finally, 98?
April 1998. And for that show in Hawaii... I had Eddie Sherman, the ... columnist on,
who right.
admitted in his column that he was part of a trial for Viagra, and he was very grateful for it because he was a diabetic, and he had a happy marriage, and so he was willing to talk about this on the air, and I brought in a urologist, too, and one of the things that they said then was, the urologist said Hawaii in particular, with so many Asian men, they would prefer something that they could take in secret, not tell anybody, a pill, rather than, you know, a penis pump there were other things that were more obvious. But a pill could be discreet. But then there wasn't communication about that, and so all of a sudden... In some relationships, he can get it up, but he hasn't been being attentive to her or nice to her and for years, and her vagina's gotten dry, and it hurts, and he wants to stick it in. And it's just, it's a recipe for a relationship unraveling and maybe even divorce. And that's, you started to talk about the Viagra divorces, and that's of course, and Time Magazine, right in late in 1998, they had a cover story on Viagra, and they talked about this Viagra divorce and death at that time. Because some guys were wanting to take this little blue pill, and they weren't seeing their doctors, and it would lower their blood pressure so much that they would die.
Oh, wow.
They had other issues. That's why it's so important for guys that are having any kind of dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, premature ejaculation, but especially ED, to go see a urologist first. Do you have any physiological stuff going on? That's what these guys did. And they often, doctors often found, oh, he's pre-diabetic or he's got the beginnings of heart disease. The penis is a real indicator of heart health. Is the man getting enough blood to his penis? And then is there enough nitric oxide inside the cylinder? And the sildenafil, I may be mispronouncing that, in Viagra is what makes nitric oxide, because as a man ages, his nitric oxide diminishes. And so, it's complex.
Wow.
I never
knew that part of the chemical equation. I'm once again learning something by listening to Diana Wiley.
Yeah, but you're not a sex therapist. You're a divorce lawyer. So that's one reason we're
sex therapy
good friends.
Sounds like
we
it's
do
more
learn
fun.
From each other.
But you know what happens realistically is once men get erect, you know, they probably skimped too much on foreplay. To, you know, from a woman's perspective, that foreplay has been too skimpy to begin with. But once they're erect, they really, you know, they really may start skimping even more. They may want to just get her done, because if they, especially if they haven't had an erection for a while, they may want to just really use it. And and you can imagine an older woman, especially, who's, you know, he hasn't had sex with her husband for 5 years, and all of a sudden he comes charging into the bedroom, like a big bull, it would probably put her off, I would think. And especially, like I say, there's no Viagra equivalent for women. So, you know, a lot of women probably who were hoping their mates would settle down and maybe transcend their sex obsessions as they age, the way both genders, like I say, used to do, you know, now, however, thanks to Viagra, that hope's become rather one-sided. Men are maybe almost getting to be abusive of women when they get into that heightened state, shall we say. I don't know.
Their little brain is outthinking their big brain. Their little brain in their penis.
Yeah.
Is, what did Robin Williams say? He said, I miss him so much. He was just such a brilliant comic. He said that between the brain and the penis, there's only enough blood to run through one of them. Something, I'm paraphrasing. He said it funny, in a funnier way, but get the idea.
Yeah.
So if a man is just dominated by his cock and how he can use it, and he isn't thinking very much, or considering his female partner, his female partner is not going to like that. And maybe that's a good segue into your outline, talking about the older woman and divorce. And this, in your outline, 77%, this is on page 16 in your outline, 77% of women surveyed said they valued independence and privacy over remarriage. And 82% said they experienced new independence and strength after divorce. My PhD dissertation many, many years ago had to do with older women and sexuality. And the older women who had a new relationship often had better sex. I mean, this isn't too surprising, but I was especially looking at the Asian-Caucasian connection since I was in Hawaii at the time. And
yeah, I think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think second marriages in general
can
oftentimes be better.
I'm sorry.
I think sex oftentimes gets better in second marriages in general. That seems to have been shown to be true, that's oftentimes a bigger factor in second marriages than it was in first marriages, or maybe slightly improved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
The biggest issue is that a lot of women don't want, they don't want to be remarried. I mean,
don't want to be remarried.
If I've got a divorce client who's a male getting divorced at 55 or 60 years old, first thing they want to do is meet a new girl, probably to take care of them, and they get remarried within, you know, 2 or 3 years. You know,
that's
women,
right.
You know, oftentimes they don't remarry at all, and it's certainly not at the top of their list to find a new guy. They oftentimes would much rather hang out with their girlfriends. They'd rather not have to be taking care of men. They took care of men for, you know, 50 years already, and they're done with it. So there's a different situation for divorcing men at an older age than there is for women.
Yes, there is, and I think I've used this phrase with you in a discussion on this some years ago. Some older men are looking for a nurse with a purse.
Yeah, that's a great phrase.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of sadly true. They would like to have a woman to take care of them, and they'd also like to have a woman with enough money to maybe travel and do some other things, but they want a nurse with a purse, a woman who is independent. And a lot of women, older women, are saying just what you put in your outline, well, 77% of them anyway, valuing their independence and privacy over remarriage. They have no interest in taking care of a man.
Yeah. Well, that's proved to be the case. You know, there's a thoroughly modern trend of modern women refusing to marry at all in some cases, and especially refusing to get remarried. You know, women are in a situation now that they've never been in before, which is that they are getting some of the major major jobs. They're getting some of the major education. They're women are marrying guys who oftentimes are, they're forced to marry guys, not forced physically, but I mean just by the talent pool, who are less well educated than they are. The wife is now the main breadwinner in about 25% of all U.S. households, and versus 5 or 7% in 1970. I mean, women's situations, their earnings have gone up. Men's earnings have sort of fallen behind. More women are in the working the job market. So you've got a situation where women really have options they never used to have. I mean, it used to be that the old historical thing was that that women married for men for stability and for money and for when their gene pool or whatever, their title or whatever. Now a lot of times. That's no longer the case, because women are out earning guys. They're more educated. They've got more stability without a guy than they do with a guy. It's actually turned out that marriage has turned out to be more of an institution that benefits men than it does women. Kind of the opposite of what you used to think of.
Yes, and the rather well-known Maureen Dowd, you quote her, or you comment
her.
About
yeah.
her. Observation in your notes.
Yeah, no, she's right on. She talks about how women really are in a situation now where they don't need to be they don't need men, and they certainly don't like being having to take care of them. I mean, I talk about the phenomenon of the quote save your life wife. Nurse
yes,
with
do.
A purse. Men almost invariably need a partner, and women are really get along just fine without them. So that's, you're seeing that happen. I mean, in Japan, in Great Britain, in Europe, a lot of Scandinavian countries, the women will not marry the guys. And that's a broad generalization, of course, but I mean, it's
yeah.
The other generalization that used to be was that as soon as gals got out of college they wanted to get married and have babies, and now they're postponing marriage, they're postponing pregnancy, they're doing without pregnancy. There's fewer babies being born in America. In all the first world countries, the birth rate's dropped, so women are taking on a whole different role in society than they had before. And men, if they're not careful, are likely to be old news. Not
mm-hmm.
entirely, but what's the phrase I use in my outline? A man session, hierarchy of overachieving women, dominating slacker men, to play on recession. And it's really, it's kind of true.
There's another aspect to this. And I'm thinking that we should talk about it more when you come back for part two with you, which is the 21st of April, I think, we decided on.
Okay, good. I always love coming back, yeah.
And that is, so Wednesday Martin is a best-selling author, and she did a lot of research, and her book last year is called Untrue. She interviewed lots of women, looked at lots of the existing research, and what she found is that a lot of women are bored with the sex they're having in their marriages.
Hmm.
They'd really like to maybe open the marriages, and some have done that. Some of these women go to, this is in New York where a lot of progressive things happen in New York City, but there are these women-only parties where women drink fine wine and eat good food, but mostly they play with each other. They take off clothes and they play with each other. Isn't this surprising?
How do I get invited to one of those? Oh, I guess they're women-only parties. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So some of her ideas, and I think by the time, because I read the book, Brian, my husband, got it out of the library, and I tend to buy books, not use the library, so I want to buy that book because it was fascinating, and she was recently on a podcast with Dan Savage, and maybe I'll even listen to that again, but that's a more current problem where women are saying, we're bored
yeah.
with this long-term relationship. The guy just isn't stepping up to the plate. And so I think we should talk about that. And I also think in our next conversation, Brad, we should talk about breakups and endings because, of course, breakups are by nature emotionally difficult, but how do people communicate and how they act as they disentangle doesn't just make a contribution to happiness. It really allows the exes
personal growth.
To grow and move toward the goal of finding lasting love and emotional fulfillment. They can't do it unless they've had a good ending, some closure stuff. And I'd like to also talk with you in our next time together about what's happening in the brain, because we can use functional MRIs to look at the brain. And like anthropologist Helen Fisher, her research shows that it's that the rejected lover is it touches some parts of the brain. It resembles the chaos of pain and loss and longing resemble addiction. Oh,
interesting.
My goodness.
Okay, but there's our music, so we'll have to
wait
till Tuesday, April 21st.
Well,
I'll be back
and you
again.
And I will talk for sure more off the air, because I love talking to you, Brad Coates. Thank you so much for this show.
Thank you, Diana, and aloha to all your listeners.
And aloha to everybody. And we'll sign off and wish you all good sex. Good sex. Bye-bye.
Happy feet. Da-da-da. Happy feet. Da-da-da.